Chapter 12. For the first time in his life, that metaphor whites use about money burning a hole in your pocket had taken on meaning for Joe Leaphorn. The heat had been caused by a check for $20,000 made out to him against an account of the Breedlove Corporation. Leaphorn had endorsed it and exchanged it for a deposit slip to an account in his name in the Mancus Security Bank. Now the deposit slip resided uneasily in his wallet as he waited for Mrs. Cecilia Rivera to finish dealing with a customer and talk to him, which she did right now. Leaphorn rose, pulled back a chair for her at the lobby table where she had deposited him earlier. "Sorry," she said, "I don't like to keep a new customer waiting." She sat, examined him briefly, and got right to the point. "What did you want to ask me about?"
"First," Leaphorn said, "I want to tell you what I'm doing here, opening this account and all."
"I wondered about that," Mrs. Rivera said. "I noticed your address was Window Rock, Arizona. I thought maybe you were going into some line of business up here." That came out as a question.
"Did you notice who the check was drawn against?" Leaphorn asked. Of course she would have. It was a very small bank in a very small town. The Breedlove name would be famous here, and Leaphorn had seen the teller discussing the deposit with Mrs. Rivera, but he wanted to make sure.
"The Breedloves," Mrs. Rivera said, studying his face. "It's been a few years since we've seen a Breedlove check, but I never heard of one bouncing. Hal's widow banked here for a little while after he disappeared, but then she quit us." Mrs. Rivera was in her mid-70s, Leaphorn guessed, thin and sun-wrinkled. Her bright black eyes examined him through the top half of her bifocals with frank curiosity.
"I'm working for them now," Leaphorn said, "for the Breedloves."
He waited.
Mrs. Rivera drew in a long breath.
"Doing what?" she asked. "Would it be something to do with that Molly Mine project?"
"It may be that," Leaphorn said. "To tell the truth, I don't know. I'm a retired policeman."
He extracted his identification case and showed it to her.
"Years ago, when Hal Breedlove disappeared, I was the detective working that case."
He produced a deprecatory expression.
"Obviously, I didn't have much success with it, because it took about 11 years to find him, and then it was by accident. But anyway, the family seems to have remembered."
"Yes," Mrs. Rivera said. "Young Hal did like to climb up onto the mountains."
A dim smile appeared.
"From what I read in the Farmington Times, I guess he needed more studying on how to climb down off of them."
Leaphorn rewarded this with a chuckle. "In my experience," he said, "bankers are like doctors and lawyers and ministers. Their business depends a lot on keeping confidences."
He looked at her, awaiting confirmation of this bit of misinformation. Leaphorn had always found bankers wonderful sources of information. "Well, yes," she said. "A lot of business secrets come floating around when you're negotiating loans."
"Are you willing to handle another one?"
"Another secret?" Mrs. Rivera's expression became avid. She nodded.
"And so, Lieutenant Joe Leaphorn retired, laid his cards on the table, more or less. It was a tactic he'd used for years, based on his theory that most humans prefer exchanging information to giving it away. He'd tried to teach Jim Chi that rule, which was, tell somebody something interesting and they'll try to top it. So now he was going to tell Mrs. Rivera everything he knew about the affair of Hal Breedlove, who had been, by Four Corners standards, her former neighbor and was her one-time customer. In return, he expected Mrs. Rivera to tell him something she knew about Hal Breedlove and his ranch and his business, which was why he had opened this account here. which was what he had decided to do yesterday when, after long seconds of hesitation, he had accepted the check he had never expected to receive. They had met again yesterday at the Navajo Inn, Leaphorn, McDermott, and George Shaw. "If I take this job," Leaphorn had said, "I will require a substantial retainer." He kept his eyes on Shaw's face. "Substantial?" said McDermott. How much?" asked Shaw. How much indeed, Leaphorn thought. He had decided he would mention a price too large for them to pay, but not ludicrously overdone. $20,000, he had decided. They would make a counteroffer, perhaps $2,000. 2 weeks' pay in advance. He would drop finally to say $10,000. They would counter, and finally he would establish how important this affair was to Shaw. $20,000, Leaphorn said. McDermott had snorted, said, "Be serious, we can't..." But George Shaw had reached into his inside coat pocket and extracted a checkbook and a pen. "From what I've heard about you, we won't need to lawyer this," he said. "The $20,000 will be payment in full, including any expenses you incur for 20 weeks of your time, or until you develop the information we need to settle this business. Is that acceptable?" Leaphorn hadn't intended to accept anything, certainly not to associate himself with these two men. He didn't need money or want it. But Shaw was writing the check now, face grim and intent, which told Leaphorn there was much more involved here than he'd expected. Shaw had torn out the check, handed it to him. A little piece of the puzzle that had stuck in Leaphorn's mind for 11 years, that had been revived by the shooting of Hosteen Nez, had clicked into place. Unreadable yet, but it shed a dim light on the effort to kill Nez. If $20,000 could be tossed away like this, millions more than that must be somehow involved. That told him hardly anything, just a hint that Nez might still be, to use that white expression, worth killing, or, for Shaw, perhaps worth keeping alive. He had held the check a moment, a little embarrassed, trying to think of what to say as he returned it. He knew now that he would try again to find a way to solve this old puzzle, but for himself and not for these men. He extended the check to Shaw, said, "I'm sorry, I don't think..." Then he had seen how useful that check could be. It would give him a Breedlove connection. He wasn't a policeman any longer. This would give him the key he'd need to unlock doors. And this morning, in this small, old-fashioned bank lobby, Leaphorn was using it. "This is sort of hard to explain," he told Mrs. Rivera. "What I'm trying to do for the Breedlove family is vague. They want me to find out everything about the disappearance of Hal Breedlove and about his death on Shiprock." Mrs. Rivera leaned forward. "They don't think it was an accident?" "They don't exactly say that, but it was a pretty peculiar business. You remember it?"
"I remember it very well," Mrs. Rivera said with a wry laugh. "The Breedlove boy did his banking here, like the ranch always had. He was my customer, and he was 4 payments behind on a note. We'd sent him notices, 2x, I believe it was. And the next thing you know, he's vanished."
Mrs. Rivera laughed. "That's the sort of thing a banker remembers a long, long time."
"How was it secured? I understand he didn't get title to the ranch until his birthday, just before he disappeared."
Mrs. Rivera leaned back now and folded her arms.
"Well, now," she said, "I don't think we want to get into that. That's private business."
"No harm me asking, though," Leaphorn said. "It's a habit policemen get into. Let me tell you what I know, and then you decide if you know anything you would be free to add that might be helpful."
"That sounds fair enough," she said. "You talk, I'll listen."
And she did, nodding now and then,
sometimes indicating surprise, enjoying being an insider on an investigation. Sometimes indicating agreement as Leaphorn explained a theory, shaking her head in disapproval when he told her how little information Shaw and McDermott had given him to work on. As Leaphorn had hoped, Mrs. Rivera had become a partner. "But you know how lawyers are," he said, "and Shaw's a lawyer, too. I checked on it. He specializes in corporate tax cases. Anyway, they sure didn't give me much to work with."
"I don't know what I can add," she said. "Hal was a spendthrift, I know that. Always buying expensive toys, snowmobiles, fancy cars. He'd bought himself a, can't think of the name, one of those handmade Italian cars, for example. A Ferrari, however you pronounce that. Cost a fortune, and then he drove it over these old back roads and tore it up. He'd worked out some sort of deal with the trust and got a mortgage on the ranch, but then when they sold cattle in the fall and the money went into the ranch account, he'd spend it right out of there instead of paying his debts."
She paused, searching for something to add.
"Hal always had Sally get him first-class tickets when he flew. Sally has Mancus travel, and first-class costs an arm and a leg."
"And coach class gets there almost as quick," Leaphorn said. Mrs. Rivera nodded.
"Even when they went places together, Sally had her instructions to put Hal into first class and DeMott in coach. Now, what do you think of that?"
Leaphorn shook his head.
"Well, I think it's insulting," Mrs. Rivera said.
"Could have been DeMott's idea," Leaphorn said.
"I don't think so," Mrs. Rivera said. "Sally told..."
She cut that off.
"I talked to DeMott when I was investigating Breedlove's disappearance," Leaphorn said. "He seemed like a solid citizen."
"Well, yes, I guess so, but he's a strange one, too," she chuckled. "I guess maybe we all get a little odd, living up here with mountains all around us, you know."
"Strange," Leaphorn said. "How?"
Mrs. Rivera looked slightly embarrassed. She shrugged.
"Well, he's a bachelor, for one thing, but I guess there's a lot of bachelors around here, and he's sort of a halfway tree-hugger, or so people say. We have some of those around here, too, but they're mostly move-ins from California or back east. Not the kind of people who ever had to worry about feeding kids or working for a living."
"Tree-hugger? How'd he get that reputation?"
Leaphorn was thinking of a favorite nephew, a tree-hugger who'd gotten himself arrested leading a noisy protest at a tribal council meeting trying to stop a logging operation in the Chukchis. In Leaphorn's opinion, his nephew had been on the right side of that controversy.
"Well, I don't know," Mrs. Rivera said, "but they say Eldon was why they didn't do that Molly operation up there in the edge of the San Juan National Forest."
Leaphorn said, "Oh, what happened?"
"It was years ago. I think the spring after Hal went missing. We weren't in on the deal, of course. This bank is way too little for the multi-million-dollar things like that. A bank up in Denver was involved, I think. And I think the mining company was MCA, the Molly Corp. Anyway, the way it was told around here, there was some sort of contract drawn up, a mineral lease involving Breedlove land up the canyon, and then at first the widow was going to handle it, but Hal legally was still alive, and she didn't want to file the necessary papers to have the court say he was dead. So that tied it up. People say she stalled on that because DeMott was against it. DeMott's her brother, you know. But to tell the truth, I think it was her own idea. She's loved that place since she was a tot. Grew up on it, you know."
"I don't know much about the background," Leaphorn said.
"Well, it used to be the Double D Ranch. DeMott's daddy owned it. The price of beef was way down in the 30s. A lot of ranches around here went at sheriff's auction, including that one. Old Edgar Breedlove bought it, and he kept the old man on as foreman. Old Breedlove didn't care a thing about ranching. One of his prospectors had found the Molly deposit up the headwaters of Cache Creek, and that's what he wanted. But anyway, Eldon and Elisa grew up on the place."
Why didn't he mine the molybdenum? Leaphorn asked.
War broke out, and I guess he couldn't get the right kind of priority to get the manpower or the equipment, she laughed. Then when the war ended, the price of the ore fell, stayed down for years, and then went shooting up. Then Hal got himself lost, and that tied it all up once again. And by the time she had Breedlove declared dead, the price of ore had gone down. Is that right?
Right, Mrs. Rivera said, and looked thoughtful.
And now it's up again, Leaphorn said.
That's just what I was thinking.
You think that might be why the Breedlove Corporation would pay me the $20,000?
She looked over her glasses at him.
That's an unkind thought, she said. But I confess it occurred to me.
Even though Hal's widow owns the place now?
She owns it unless they can prove she had something to do with killing him.
We had our lawyer look into that. She wanted to extend a mortgage on the place. She looked mildly apologetic.
Can't take chances, you know, with your investors' money.
Did you extend the mortgage? Mrs. Rivera folded her arms again, but finally she said,
Well? Yes, we did.
Leaphorn grinned.
Could I guess, then, that you don't think she had anything to do with killing Breedlove? Or anyway, nobody's ever going to prove it.
I just own a piece of this bank, Mrs. Rivera said. There's people I'm responsible to, so I'd have to agree with you. I thought the loan was safe enough.
Still do? She nodded, remembering, then shook her head.
When it happened, I mean, when he just disappeared like that, I had my doubts. I always thought Elisa was a fine young lady. Good family, raised right. She used to help take care of her grandmother when the old lady had the cancer, but, you know, it sure did look suspicious. Hal inherits the lazy bee, and then the very same week, or pretty close to that anyway, he's gone. So you start thinking she might have had herself another man somewhere, and, well, you know.
That's what I thought, too, Leaphorn said. What do you think now?
I was wrong, she said.
You sound certain, Leaphorn said.
You live in Window Rock, she said. That's a little town like Mancus. You think some widow woman there with a rich husband lost somewhere could have something going with a boyfriend and everybody wouldn't know about it?
Leaphorn laughed. I'm a widower, he said, and I met this nice lady from Flagstaff on some police work I was doing. The very first time I had lunch with her, when I got back to the office, they were planning my wedding.
It's the same way out here, Mrs. Rivera said. About the time everybody around here decided that Hal was gone for good, they started marrying Elisa off to the Castro boy.
Leaphorn smiled. You know, he said, we cops tend to get too high an opinion of ourselves. When I was up here asking around after Hal disappeared, I went away thinking there wasn't a boyfriend in the background.
You got here too quick, Mrs. Rivera said. Here at Mancus, we let the body get cold before the talking starts.
I guess nothing came of that romance, Leaphorn said. At least she's still a widow.
From what I heard, it wasn't from lack of Tommy Castro's trying. About the time she got out of high school, everybody took for granted they were a pair. Then Hal showed up.
Mrs. Rivera shrugged, expression rueful.
They made a kind of foursome for a while.
Four?
Well, sometimes it was five of them. This George Shaw, he'd come out with Hal sometimes, and Eldon would go. He and Castro were the old heads, the coaches. They'd go elk hunting together, camping, rock climbing. Growing up with her dad raising her, and then her big brother, Elisa was quite a tomboy.
What broke up the group? Was it the country boy couldn't compete with the big city glamour?
Oh, I guess that was some of it, she said. But Eldon had a falling out with Tommy. They're too much alike, both bullheaded.
Leaphorn digested that. Emma's big brother hadn't liked him either, but that hadn't bothered Emma. Do you know what happened?
I heard Eldon thought Tommy was out of line making a play for his little sister.
She was just out of high school, 8 or 10 years between them, I guess.
So Elisa was willing to let Big Brother monitor her love life,
Leaphorn said.
I don't hear about that happening much these days.
Me neither, Mrs. Rivera said, and laughed. But you know, she said, suddenly dead serious, Elisa is an unusual person. Her mother died when she was about in the second grade, but Elisa takes after her. Has a heart big as a pumpkin and a cast iron backbone, just like her mother. When old man DeMott was losing the ranch, it was Elisa's mama who held everything together, got her husband out of the bars and out of jail a time or two. One of those people who are always there in the background, looking out for other people, you know?
Mrs. Rivera paused at this to see what Leaphorn thought of it. Leaphorn, not sure of where this was leading, just nodded.
So there Elisa was, after Hal was out of the picture. Tommy was beginning to court her again, and Eldon wanted to run him off. They even got into a yelling match down at the High Country Inn. So there's Elisa with two men to take care of, and knowing how she is, I have a theory about that. She paused again. It's just a theory.
I'd like to hear it, Leaphorn said.
I think she loved them both, Mrs. Rivera said. But if she married the Castro boy, what in the wide world was Eldon going to do? It was her ranch now. Eldon loved it, but he wouldn't stay around and work for Tommy, and Tommy wouldn't want him to. She sighed. If we had a Shakespeare around here, they could have made a tragedy out of it.
So this Castro was a rock climber, too, Leaphorn said. Does he still live here?
If you got gas down at the Texaco station, you might have seen him. That's his garage.
What do you think? Did this affection for Castro linger on after she married Hal?
If it did, she didn't let it show.
She thought about that a while, looked sad, shook her head.
Far as you could tell, being an outsider, she was the loyal wife. I couldn't see much to love in Hal myself, but every woman's different about that, and Elisa was the sort who, the more that was wrong with a man, the more she'd stand behind him. She mourned for him. Matter of fact, I think she still does. You hardly ever see her looking happy.
How about her brother, then? You said he was sort of strange.
She shrugged. Well, he liked to climb up cliffs. To me, that's strange.
Somebody said he taught Hal the sport.
That's not quite the way it was. After old Edgar got the place away from DeMott's daddy, Hal and Shaw would come out in the summers. Shaw had been climbing already, so he didn't need much teaching. And DeMott and Castro were already into climbing some when they had time. Eldon was about 6 or 8 years older than Hal and more of an athlete. From what I heard, he was the best of the bunch.
A customer came in the cool smell of autumn and the sound of laughter followed him through the doorway from the street. Leaphorn could think of just one more pertinent question. You mentioned Hal Breedlove had overdue note payments when he disappeared. How'd that get paid off? It was the sort of bank business question he wasn't sure she would answer. Neither was she, but finally she shook her head and laughed.
Well, you sort of guessed right about not having it secured the way we should have. Old family and all. So we weren't pressing, but we'd sold off another loan to a Denver bank, made it to a feedlot operator who liked to go off to Vegas and try to beat the blackjack tables. With people like that, you make sure you have it secured. Wrote it on 62 head of bred heifers he had grazing up in a Forest Service lease. The Denver people foreclosed on it, and they called us for help on claiming the property. She laughed. Those Denver people had 62 head of cows out in the mountains grazing on a Forest Service lease, and not an idea in the world about what to do with them. So I told them Eldon DeMott might round them up for him and truck them over to Durango to the auction barn, and he did.
He got paid enough for that to pay off Breedlove's note?
She laughed again. Not directly, but I mentioned we made the loan on bred heifers, so we sold the Denver bank a mortgage on 62 head, but when DeMott went to get 'em, they weren't pregnant anymore. They were mama cows.
She paused, wanting to see if Leaphorn understood the implications of this. Leaphorn said, "Ah, yes, he didn't get back from Las Vegas to Brandom."
"Ah, yes, is right," Mrs. Rivera said. "In fact, he didn't get back at all. The sheriff has a warrant out for him, so there was Eldon with 62 cows loaded up and all those calves left over. They were all still slicks. Not any of them branded yet. Nobody in the world had title to them. Nobody owned them but the Lord in heaven."
"Enough to pay off the note."
"He might have had a little bit left over," she said, and looked at Leaphorn over her glasses. "Wait a minute now," she said. "Don't you get any wrong ideas. I don't actually know what in the world happened to those calves, and I've been talking way too much, and it's time to get some work done."
Back at his car, Leaphorn fished his cellular telephone from the glove compartment, dialed his window rock number, and punched in the proper code to retrieve any messages accumulated by his answering machine. The first call was from George Shaw, asking if he had anything to report and saying he could be reached at room 23, Navajo Inn. The second call was from Sergeant Addison Deke at the Chinle Police Station.
"Better give me a call, Joe," Deke said. "It probably doesn't amount to anything, but you asked me to sort of keep an eye on Amos Nez, and you might like to hear about this."
Leaphorn didn't check on whether there was a third call. He dialed the Arizona area code and Chinle Police Department number. Yes, Sergeant Deke was in. He sounded apologetic.
"Probably nothing, Joe," he said. "Probably wasting your time, but after we talked, I told the boys to keep it in their minds that whoever shot Nez might try it again. You know, keep an eye out, be looking."
Deke hesitated. Leaphorn, who almost never allowed impatience to show, said, "What did they see?"
"Nothing, actually, but Tazba Lovejoy came in this morning. I don't think you know him. He's a young fella out of recruit training 2 years ago. Anyway, Tazba told me he'd run into one of those Resource Enforcement Agency rangers having coffee, and this guy was telling him about seeing a poacher up on the rim of Canyon del Muerto yesterday."
Sergeant Deke hesitated again. This time, Leaphorn gave him a moment to organize his thoughts.
"The ranger told Tazba he was checking on some illegal firewood cutting, and he stopped at that turnout overlook down into Del Muerto. Wanted to take a leak. He was getting that done, standing there looking out across the canyon, and he kept seeing reflections off something or other across the canyon. No road over there, you know, and he wondered about it, so he went to his truck and got his binoculars to see what he could see. There was a fellow over there with binoculars. The reflections turned out to be coming off of lenses, I guess. Anyway, he had a rifle, too."
"Deer hunter, maybe," Leaphorn said. Deke laughed.
"Joe," he said, "how long's it been since you've been deer hunting? That'd be out on that tongue of the plateau between Del Muerto and Black Rock Canyon. Nobody's seen a deer over there since God knows when."
"Maybe it was an Anglo deer hunter then. Did he get a good look at him?"
"I don't think so. The ranger thought it was funny. Hunter over there and nothing to hunt. But I guess he was going to call it attempted poaching or conspiracy to poach, so he drove back up to Wheatfield's campground and tried to get back in there as far as he could on that old washed-out track, but he gave up on it."
"Did he get a good enough look to say man or woman?"
"I asked Tazba, and he said the ranger didn't know for sure. He said they were thinking man on grounds a woman wouldn't be stupid enough to go hunting where there wasn't anything to shoot at. I thought you'd like to know about it, because it was just up the canyon a half mile or so from where that sniper shot old Amos."
"Which would put it just about right over the Nez place," Leaphorn said.
"Exactly," Deke said. "You could jump right down on his roof."